It's Joe with BVD, Bruce, and we are at Club C, we call it.
Great to be here, Joe. Great to be here hanging loose at Club C.
Yeah, we call it that because, well, we both have cancer.
You're two for two here.
Yeah, I have breast cancer, but Bruce has a very rare blood cancer.
A non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
You don't say.
So there you go.
I'd like to try to say the name of it.
But you'll hack it
Walgreens.
No, it's not Walgreens.
Okay. What is the name of it?
Walgreens Blood Bummer. No, it's I'd love to say it's a $50 name for a $20 disease.
Yeah.
Okay, it's my pat little line, but
it's very nice.
Waldenstrom's, named after the Swedish discoverer of this particular disease.
Huh.
Waldenstrom's macroglobulinemia. One nifty little eight-syllable word right there. But
as Bruce and I have been talking about this, people with cancer get together and that's what they talk about.
How can we not?
And apparently he wanted this cancer.
It was interesting in the sense that, you know, the oncologist who was investigating my blood samples, and he was saying, okay, I've got one more test to go here, but I can tell you it's either going to be multiple myeloma or Waldenstrom's. And I said, you know, from what I know, I should be pulling for Waldenstrom's here. And he pretty much agreed. He just said, yeah, it's just because Waldenstrom's is a little less dramatic. Myeloma is a pretty serious. If you've got myeloma, then what you're in line for are things like bone marrow transplants and really serious procedures like that that knock you back. They're expensive, et cetera, et cetera. Waldenstrom's, on the other hand, is a rather, the great word associated with Waldenstrom's is indolent. It's a slow-growing cancer. And so, you know, I got diagnosed 6 years ago, and we've basically been in a monitor mode for that whole time. And I really haven't, A, I felt pretty good, and B, I haven't needed too much treatment up to this point.
Been comparing our chemotherapy, and, you know, I'm bald right now. At the end of the podcast, I'm going to let Bruce see my bald head for the first time.
The unveiling.
Yeah, only a couple people have seen it. I'm so self-conscious about it. It's silly. We're talking about how it felt to get the word that you had cancer, you know? The blow, it felt like a punch in the stomach to me.
Well, you know what I'm remembering, and when you talk about the memories of that day in October of 2004 for me, it was the night before I knew I was going in. And it was, you can imagine, the night of laying in bed, staring at the stucco on the ceiling, going, okay, this is going to be a big one tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is not an ordinary day. This is a biggie.
How'd you sleep that night?
Horrible. You know?
Well, let's back up to why did you go in?
It was a weird summer where I just didn't feel quite right.
What do you mean?
And it wasn't that I was particularly tired or fatigued, but I knew what I feel like when I'm right, when I'm healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt off a little bit in some almost indefinable, vague way, but yet it was real. I kept trying to deny it, and it just wouldn't be denied. And I'd had an interesting couple of episodes earlier that summer with a couple of tick bites. And so we first started looking with an infectious disease specialist, thinking there might be some lingering tick disease or something like that.
So you got a blood test.
So I got a blood test, and the infectious disease guy couldn't find anything. He says, well, you know, I hate to lay this sobering news on you, but I think I better turn this blood sample over to a hematologist. And now we're talking about a blood cancer. It's time to look something systemic here.
So you knew you had something.
So I knew something
was
up.
Coursing through your veins.
Something was up, and the longer we kept looking for the answer in the blood tests, the various blood tests, the more dramatic and the more obvious it was going to be something, okay, this is going to be fairly dramatic, perhaps even heavy. But it's not going to be something where, we found that it's a little disease and we can cure it with an antibiotic. Mm-hmm. That was getting more and more remote.
Yeah, you knew you were in for something.
You know you're in for something when he says, I'm turning you over to the hematologist / oncologist.
Oh, God.
And the hematologist runs a couple of tests and said, okay, I think we're on the right track. We're going to pin it down. And it got to that point where it's either going to be, I need one more test result to determine if it's either myeloma or Waldenstrom, and that's what led to the
Waldenstrom.
Beautiful night, you know, just staring at the ceiling going, okay.
That's not what you said, but we're not going to say that here. Yeah. So when you got the word, did he call you or did you go into the office? I got a phone call from the biopsy doc, and she
laid it on you right there?
She called me the day after the biopsy and said, you've tested positive. And I'm like, excuse me? You have breast cancer. I'm like, no, I don't.
Give it to me straight, doc.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did, whether I wanted it or not.
Yeah, that you was didn't fine. Even have a chance to say, give it to me straight, doc. She laid it on you straight.
And I appreciated that, yeah. though. And she had told me the day before, I will call you or I'll have my assistant call you. And when she called, I thought, uh-oh.
She's the calling. One to make this call.
She makes the heavies.
She makes the heavy call.
So anyway, it felt like a punch in the stomach. And did he call you or did you go in?
I went in.
And you saw him face to face.
I saw him face to face, went in. And in that interesting context where it's a choice between one of the two cancers, it was almost a context of, here's the good news. You've got Waldenstrom's.
And so you said,
aren't I a lucky fellow? You know, you realize that, okay, this is certainly a serious disease. Mm-hmm. But the fortunate thing in my case was it was pretty much under control. We were just going to pursue a program of every 6 months, come in, give blood, monitor a certain couple of factors in the blood. And when those factors rise to a certain level, then go in for the chemotherapy.
Were you told that perhaps those factors would not rise to a level requiring treatment?
True, yes.
You were told that.
Yeah.
But you did have to get chemotherapy. How long before the chemo?
You know what? I was diagnosed October 2004. It wasn't until March of 2009 that this one protein factor in the blood got high enough to where the doc said, okay, I want to knock it back. And I've got just the drug for you.
And what was the drug?
The drug is called Rituxan.
And how was the chemo?
And it is, you know, it was, I hope everybody who has to get chemo, it was actually pretty non-invasive, non-obtrusive. It was so easy to deal with. It almost, I call it chemo light.
I hate you.
I know you as well. As well you should. Because I was telling Joe, I was just the first time Bruce. I went, I had to go into four Fridays in a row in March. And so you go in and you're there in the lounge and it looks like real chemo in that it takes about 3.5 to 4 hours to get the bag dripped into you.
Right.
But when I got out of there at about 3 o'clock that afternoon, I was famished.
Oh. Had an appetite, hungry.
Lordy.
Hungry for...
You know, I just went to the local Mexican joint
and my God.
Chowed down.
I can't imagine.
Right? Ugh. So I go stuff my face, have a margarita too, and then, you know, yeah.
Oh, you could even drink?
And they didn't tell me any differently. I asked, I said, oh, so what should I watch out for? How should I change my behavior? Mm-hmm. And they said, do what you want to do. You feel like going to have Mexican lunch? Go do it. Just take it easy tonight. Mm-hmm. So I did, and you know, went and had a couple of margaritas, and then went home and said, "Let's do movie night," and had a couple of glasses of wine, and it was an easy going night. Oh. Wake up Saturday morning, and I'm not kidding you, felt absolutely fabulous. And just said, well, I'm impressed. I sure hope this stuff is doing something because I don't know if I should be feeling this good.
Gosh, that's so weird because, as you know, most people's experience, including mine, is you get the drip and then 3 days later, 4 days later, you feel like hell.
Yeah.
And you can't just eat anything.
It was.
And alcohol tastes terrible.
And alcohol, you have no desire for a drink.
No.
None.
It's the last thing on my mind.
Do you want on the day, on the night you get home from your session?
Well, you don't feel anything the night you get, the day you're done.
Yeah, you're relatively okay.
Yeah, and then the next day, you're all right. I go in and get a shot. It's a Neulasta shot, and it gets those white blood cells being produced in your bone marrow.
Right.
And so you take something to offset that side effect because it can feel like the flu.
Do they tell you to not do certain things in terms of diet or consumption?
Depends on the day that you're in your cycle. I can't have fresh fruit and vegetables, basically. There's all sorts of diet books that you follow with that.
Okay.
But what you crave is something, you know, kind of bland and fatty. I mean,
that'll fill you up. On the night you come home,
meals. Mm-hmm.
So you have it, you're not feeling the effects of it.
No. Uh-uh.
So the night you get home, you're regular Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
And you're the next day, you're regular Joe.
Uh-huh.
But then it starts kind of creeping in and you feel like you've ingested every household cleaner in aisle 10 at King Soopers.
On day three, are you in the sort of, I'm not hungry, I'm not thirsty, I just want to be left alone mode? How would you describe that?
No, you're hungry and you feel like eating a big breakfast and then you taper off the food as the day goes on. You might have a popsicle in the afternoon and then a really small dinner. And then at dinner, you're just like, ugh. And then day four for me, and I've had two chemos. Day four for me is you can't do anything but lie around.
Yeah.
And you can't concentrate.
Does it sound good to, for example, lie in the shower? You ever done that?
No.
Where you just say, I'm just going to lie in the shower for a half hour and see if that feels better?
No, you're not inclined to do that.
How about massage?
No, I don't want anybody touching me.
Okay.
Oh, it's just bad.
It's just a good day for you to be left alone.
Yeah.
But you need to be waited on, is it nice to be waited on?
Well, John wants to wait on me. My husband, you know, wants to wait on me, so he doesn't want me to be left alone. But it would be fine.
Yeah.
Because I'm no good, you know, to anybody else.
Do you watch movies?
Yeah. But I can't concentrate, so it takes me about 5 hours to watch a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
But, you know, that's the difference. I'm doing a whole different kind of chemo. You know, people that I meet who have had chemo or are in chemotherapy ask me what I'm being given, and Taxotere, carboplatin, and a target therapy called Herceptin.
Are those all in one bag?
Nope.
Are you getting them three bags dripping in at the same time?
Nope. You get them individually, and it takes about 4 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, to do all that, because they give you a bag of Benadryl.
You get a bag of Benadryl?
I get a bag of Benadryl and a bag of...
So you're not conscious.
Yeah, you are.
Are you don't completely doze off?
No, because my friends and husband will not let me go to chemo alone. The next time I go, I'm just going to be dropped off, because I shouldn't drive after it.
Do you have a stack of magazines you're taking in?
Oh, you take your computer, you take books, you do anything. I'd like to just kind of, you know, work on stuff that I work on. And
do you find yourself chatting with other folks there at the old chemo lounge?
Well, here's the thing. At my doctor's office, the chemo is done there in two little treatment rooms, and there are only two treatment chairs per room, which are really nice glider, rocker recliner, leather chairs. The first time there was someone there, and she was very nice, and we chatted. And the second time I was by myself. Nobody else in the room. So it's not like one of these big, huge facilities where there are 40 people along the wall.
Right. That's what my experience was, where it was a room of 16 lounge chairs.
Did you chat with people?
It was pretty, everybody was pretty much, you know, had their face in a book or a magazine. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a whole bunch of chatting going on.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody doing their own thing and just, you know, having their quiet time and getting it done.
So what's it going to be like for you for the rest of your life?
Well,
it's doable. It's manageable.
I'm still in this now monitoring mode. That was March of 09, mm-hmm, when I went through this 4-round session of chemo. And, you know, as it turned out, this wonderful drug, Rituxan, not only was it easy for me to deal with and didn't really force any changes on my lifestyle at all, but it did what it was supposed to do, which was take a protein factor that they monitor in the blood, cut it by 50%. And the oncologist was very pleased, saying, this is what we wanted. We were looking for it. We will continue to monitor, and you know that factor will again slowly rise. And when it gets to a certain level, we'll again administer the Rituxan, and we should be able to do this for a few years and keep things under control. Now, that said, great drug, very effective, outrageously expensive. I was looking at the bill, and I saw the figure $9,000, and I thought that was the total for the four sessions. And as I looked deeper into the bill, got into page 5 of the bill, said, no, that is $9,000 a bag. Total tab, $43,000. My insurance pays about 90%, so out of pocket, I'm $4,300. You know, it was funny, while I was midway through the therapy, I was saying to myself, well, damn, this stuff is so easy to deal with. I hope it does something. So the fact that it did something and yet was quite easy to deal with, I thought, I get in the world of cancer drugs and chemotherapy, this is a good deal.
So what is your deductible? Do you mind me asking that?
I forget. I think it's $1,000 or maybe $2,000. Not that high.
So your chemo, for that year.
By the time I was strapped into the chemo, I had already paid my deductible.
Okay. So for that year, it was like $5,500
right.
for your medical.
Yep.
You know what our deductible is?
I do not.
$12,000 for a family.
And it's still the four of you?
There's three of us.
Three of you.
Yeah, Jackson College.
Okay.
So for a calendar year. And I diagnosed in August, and then I'm going to get a bilateral mastectomy after the first of the year, and then radiation, and then reconstruction, and all this stuff. I'll have fabulous tatas, by the way.
That mastectomy will really do a number for your deductible.
So what I'm saying is, we will meet our deductible for 2 calendar years running. And so I just say to John, honey, think of it as like we bought a new car. We bought a $24,000 car.
Yeah.
Because after we meet our deductible, it's 100%.
Uh-huh. Oh,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah. They pay 100%.
Well,
so we'll, you know, as a family, as three people, you know, we're out that 12 grand. And then you think that John would go get a physical now that we've met our deductible?
You certainly would.
No.
And what's going on there? What deep symbology and psychology is going on there?
We do not have the time.
We really don't, huh?
No, we don't have the time for that.
That's a whole new... But speculations on John,
old
the podcast.
Codger holdout. I don't know. Yeah, but I think he is going to get some kind of a blood test just to see what's going on.
Well, I know, for example, and I've been procrastinating here, but it's time for me to, in this case, literally drink the Kool-Aid and go back to the colonic, go to the digestive health center and get the colonoscopy.
You haven't had a colonoscopy?
I have, but I'm due for number 2.
No pun intended.
Pardon that, yeah. The best pun's always the most unconscious. I am indeed due for number 2. We're heading it. It's not going to get any lighter or easier. We got to keep on top of this whole doctor thing.
Yeah, but see, I thought I was going to escape cancer for some reason. You know, I thought I was exempt.
That was a happy bubble you lived in for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, darn it.
Pop.
But you know what I've noticed about Bruce, and this is after Bruce told me that he had this blood cancer. Then you started hearing from Bruce, well, guess what? You get an email. I'm on a cruise. Okay, this is the least likely to cruise guy in the world. So Bruce has a little bucket list.
Indeed.
Yeah.
There are some things on there where you just say to yourself, why am I putting this off? Let's do it.
What else is on your bucket list?
You know what? I have a funny one. It's a fairly lengthy list, but the one that comes right to the top of my head is that I've only had one or two encounters with the Aurora Borealis, and I found it to be a fascinating, wondrous evening where I was in the middle of British Columbia which happens there once in a while. The Northern Lights will drop down to that latitude. But I know of a hot spring resort right outside of Fairbanks, Alaska, where you get in the hot spring with your glass of wine in hand, mm-hmm. and if there's no clouds that night, your chances are pretty good of having a big old dazzling Northern Lights show.
Oh, that's cool.
Of course, you would think the right time to do that would be July or something when it's fairly pleasant up there at that latitude, but it's 23 hours of sunlight. If you want to see the Northern Lights, you have to go when it's cold.
Got to go in the winter.
Got to go in the winter.
Okay.
Got to suck it up and go in the winter. But that's a spot on the old list. That would be a great trip, I think.
You know, I got to get cracking on that. I don't have a bucket list.
You got the, you know, in fact, I was talking with our mutual friend, G.
Mm-hmm.
There are two lists, really. There's the bucket list, and then there's the bucket list, only it rhymes with bucket and begins with F.
Uh-huh.
Right.
How does that differ from the rhyming bucket list?
That's your list of things that you're never going to do and you never want to do.
Can you pull something from that list and share it?
Well, yeah, I'm sure I can. I'm never going to, you know, dance in a ballet company production.
I see.
It's something where you just go, F it.
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? I think bungee jumping, which is on a lot of people's bucket list for some mm-hmm. reason, would be on my other.
That's on your other list.
Yeah.
There
no
you
thanks,
go.
You
right
know,
there. That's
that
on
stuff.
Mine too.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's go. Oh, God I bless know. You, baby. You got a gorgeous head. Here. Yeah, I get to feel it. Or do I?
I don't care.
All right. There.
Pet me. Ah, oh, that feels good, Bruce.
Probably feels good, huh?
I never thought I'd be doing this. Sitting here and having Bruce rub my bald head.
Stroke your... Actually, you got a little fuzz
stroke.
There.
Stroke.
That feels good on my hand, too, Joe.
Oh, it's like Velcro.
Oh, Joe, I love you.
I love you, too, Bruce.
All right.
Thanks
and
for
thank
listening.
You for sharing.
Yeah, you too.
Okay.